Welcome to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. Welcome back, I should say. I'm Susie Kolick, the founder of Pretty Deadly Self-Defense, a self-defense program I developed for women based on my experiences as a violent crime survivor and my 23 years of training in the Japanese art of ninjutsu. We have had 6 seasons of the Pretty Deadly Podcast so far, and recently we've taken a little pause to restructure. In the past, the show has had co-hosts, guests, strings of interviews. Every season is a little bit different. And now, for lucky season number 7, we're going to try this one with just me and a guest interview with a certified Pretty Deadly trainer at least once a month. But the rest of the time, it'll just be me talking about self-defense, teaching self-defense, and martial arts to women. So I'm going to dive right in, and in this episode, talk about hysteria and using your voice in self-defense. They say it's a man's world. So what does that mean for the rest of us? Before I go on, I want to take a minute to tell you about a new podcast series that's answering that question. It's called The Story of Woman. From authors and politicians to athletes and activists, the Story of Woman podcast features interviews with those who explore our world through the female gaze. Every episode, the host, Anna Steklein, speaks with women at the top of their industries who are leading social and cultural change. They've just launched a new season looking at change and how women make it happen. Their new season features a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, Afghanistan's youngest ever female mayor, a co-creator of the Black Lives Matter movement, and an indigenous environmentalist from Chad, and a lot more. For real change to happen, we need to hear more of women's voices. So be sure to subscribe to The Story of Woman, singular, wherever you get your podcasts. So, speaking of women's voices, I was invited by a German artist named Melanie Schmidli to participate in an immersive performance experience she's producing here in Berlin next week, or this week by the time this podcast airs, so that would be July 5th. It's about women's hysteria and the power of the female voice. Melanie was inspired by a book of photographs of female hysteria patients at Salpêtrière Hospital in Paris during the 1870s. I know I just butchered that name. Sorry, friends in France. Let me just put this into some context. The term hysteria itself stems from the Greek word hysterica, meaning uterus. The ancient Greeks believed that women who were acting in a way that they felt was erratic was caused by something called a wandering womb. They believed that women's uteruses just sort of floated aimlessly around the body and caused trouble. Its diagnosis and the treatment for it were routine for hundreds of years. It's a diagnosis that has only ever been used on women. Women who were suspected to have been hysterical exhibited a wide array of symptoms, including insomnia, sexual desire, or even a tendency to cause trouble. People who were diagnosed with hysteria were often forced to enter an asylum or to undergo a surgical hysterectomy or both. Forced hysterectomy on women is a long documented subject, and that is a subject for a whole nother episode. So bringing us back into the present, Melanie's artistic exploration of women's hysteria and the female voice takes place in 3 parts. One with a female death metal singer who uses her voice to growl and scream and screech and, you know, generally rock out. The second is with a midwife, who of course uses the voice or encourages her clients to use their voice to assist with childbirth. And the third part is with me, who will be talking about using the voice as a tool for self-defense. So, how do we use the voice as a tool for self-defense? In traditional self-defense courses, like the kind that were around when I was growing up, there were a lot of myths around using the voice. And I say myths because they were believed to be the only truth or the only correct way of doing things. And obviously, I don't think that that's true. So yelling no or yelling stop were, and still are often really encouraged, especially in time with kicks and punches. Yelling fire is something that has been told to women or to people in general to do when we're in trouble, because people won't help you if you yell help, which is an old urban myth and has been put to rest many times. And also doesn't make any sense, because often if you yell fire, people will run in the opposite direction. Yelling no and yelling stop, especially in time with physical movement, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with using words that encourage boundary setting and encourage kind of drawing a line in the sand. But you don't have to. That's kind of what I'm getting at. You know, you don't have to say no. You don't have to say stop. And I personally, in the world of self-defense, don't really like associating these words only with physical actions, because it continues or perpetuates a really negative association for women. And for me, I mean, all of Pretty Deadly is based on the fact that self-defense is negative. It's considered as something negative and extreme, and that's what we're trying to change. People are often encouraged, you know, speak with confidence, use your voice, make a lot of noise. And, you know, again, I have a really big problem with this, because a lot of people have quiet voices. They're not big, loud people. They don't really have any desire, and it's not a part of their character to get loud. And that's okay. But I see women who have taken self-defense courses where that's being encouraged or that's being enforced get really, really, really uncomfortable, who feel like, you know, I guess this is just something I can't do, or self-defense is just always going to be something so uncomfortable for me that I don't really even want to do it. And again, I think it's kind of messed up. It's not really accepting for people where they are. And understanding that you don't have to be loud and you don't have to be negative. If you've been listening to this podcast through the past 7 seasons, or you know anything about Pretty Deadly or me, you'll know that, of course, I have a problem with these issues, because I think in a way they're just sort of perpetuating these ideas that aren't really realistic for us in real life situations. But what they can do in traditional self-defense classes is they can undermine our confidence exactly when we really need it. Because if we're creating such a deeply negative association with things like saying no or having to speak up with confidence, and then we're less likely to actually use those things. We need to know that we can trust the tools that we have, and you don't trust things that you have a negative association with. I mean, period. In martial arts, using the voice is called ki-ai. So if you watch an old karate movie or karate satire and you see somebody chop a piece of wood with their hand, they're going to go, hi-ya, and that's a ki-ai. And usually in martial arts, we use this to kind of both add energy to a movement as well as dispel energy, because you usually want a ki-ai when you're hitting the ground after being thrown. The ki-ai isn't only about yelling, but it's something that we often all do, whether we realize it or not, and whether we're martial artists or not. So every time you stub your toe, when you yell something like, oh, that is a ki-ai. You are expelling part of that energy. If you are into sports and your team scores a goal and you shout, ah, or yay, or whatever, a lot of times when you're really excited, that shout comes out and you don't really have any control over it. But that's also a ki-ai. So we all do it, actually. We all use our voice in this way. And of course, we can control it and use it as a self-defense tool when we want. In Pretty Deadly courses, we play a game called Fuck Yeah. It's really about getting people in touch with their own ki-ai. And what we're trying to do is get people comfortable with yelling whatever naturally comes out. For me, I'm Gen X. My favorite word is fuck. I mean, that's how it goes. But it can be anything. Whatever you yell, it doesn't really matter, especially if you're in distress, because it's about the tone. It's not about the word. So you can yell no, you can yell stop, you can yell help, but you can also yell Bob, you can yell flowers, you can yell 49ers if you want, you can yell Mannschaft, you can yell whatever. Again, it's really the tone. If people hear a tone of distress in your voice, they know that you need help. In the event that I survived and that put me on this path in life, I have no idea what I was yelling. I think I was just making noise. But it definitely brought help. So it doesn't really matter. And I don't like keeping people in these, like, you know, it has to be this, it has to be that, you have to do these things or else, I mean, the underlying messages, or else it's not going to work. And we don't need any more messages like that as women. The voice, though, can also be modulated for different scenarios, you know, so it's also not always about yelling and screaming. It can also be used in completely different ways. So if someone's running at me in a threatening way, I can use my voice like in a short, sharp shout to disrupt them, you know, like, ha, but obviously a lot louder, which will stop them in their tracks. If someone is focused on hurting me or tackling me or stealing something that I'm holding and they're running at me at speed, they're focused on the target. So interrupting that focus with a short, sharp, loud noise is kind of, you know, the brain has a glitch almost. And we play this game again in Pretty Deadly. And if you, now I've kind of ruined it for everyone who's going to take a class, but we do play this game and we do make this demonstration so people can see that, you know, especially the person who's running at you, it's really alarming. And you stop and you almost fall over because it can just disrupt what you're focused on so severely. It's fantastic. But you can also use what I like to call the Ivanka Trump voice, that kind of very low, monotone voice that's really even. It's very soothing, almost hypnotic, and you can use it to de-escalate, right? Especially in situations where someone is in a lot of mental distress and they're threatening to hurt you or they're threatening to hurt someone. This is a common tactic used with people who are negotiators for hostage situations, for example. You keep your voice very calm and very smooth, and you repeat everything that somebody says. Not necessarily verbatim, because that gets annoying, but you feed it back to them to show that you understand. If someone says, like, you know, if you make another move, I'm going to shoot, for example, you can say, I'm staying still so you don't have to. Right? Kind of repeat it back to them with slightly different words. That's an unfortunate example, especially for American listeners. I apologize. It's kind of just what came out. But it's repeating it back to show that you understand, staying really calm and help bring them down from wherever they are in their mental state until you can get to a place where you can much more safely exit the situation. You can also use something that I like to call mom voice. Everybody knows what this is. If you have a mom, at some point, she changed her voice to include a tone that means she's so far beyond having enough of whatever you're getting up to that if you don't go do whatever it is she needs you to do right now, it's over. I don't know if anyone's ever actually gone against mom voice to find out what happens, like what is over for mom voice, but we all know it, it's over, and it works really well. I have used this in real life situations to get people away from me, you know, people who were threatening me, not large groups, but one-on-one. When I've been threatened, when someone is insisting that they're going to follow me or they're going to come home with me or whatever it is, you can use mom voice to stop them, really. You can make a very final statement of, I said no. It's a little bit different for everybody because everyone has a different mom, but you can hear that tone in your head, and with some practice, you can also get it out. I encourage people to practice it, usually not with your partners, because that can create a bizarre dynamic. But a great place to practice it is at work, because there's always somebody who's going to annoy you at work. And that's a wonderful place to practice your mom voice on. I can also use my voice like a little girl. I can bring the tone up so that I sound less threatening. Hi, it's really nice to meet you. I think what you're doing is great over here. I'm just going to exit out the back door. Don't mind me. Whatever it is that you might be saying, to show subrogation, you know, to show like, I recognize this is your space. This is, you're the boss here. That's totally fine with me. I am non-threatening to you. I can also lower it to show authority. I can lower it as much as mom voice to like kind of bring that tone behind it. But I can also just lower it to sound like an adult. When I don't inflect with a question at the end of my sentence, that can, like I just did, that can also give us authority. So we can use our voices in all these different ways. And we want to remember as well that the voice in self-defense is usually our first form of self-defense. We usually tell someone like, hey, you know, don't stop what you're doing. I don't really like it. Or don't come any closer. And then we might repeat it, right? And we repeat it usually louder because we're starting to get a little stressed out or maybe even angry or maybe afraid. But we also tend to repeat it to give the other person the benefit of the doubt. Maybe you didn't hear me the first time. So let me just say it again, a little bit louder. Stop. Don't come any closer. I've had enough of this. No. It's only when they continue to breach your boundaries that we use physical self-defense to make space so we can get away, right? So the voice is often the very first form of self-defense that we use when we need to use self-defense. I want to talk for a second about women's voices and hysteria. If you've been paying attention over the past few years to the world, not necessarily to me, you've hopefully come across the phenomenon of the angry black woman. I'm calling this a phenomenon not because black women aren't usually angry or have no reason to be angry, but because they are more often accused of sounding angry when contributing their voice to any serious conversation. And I'm using the word serious conversation on purpose here. It's a way to tone police. It's a way to demean and dismiss. Your serious voice does not belong in this serious conversation. You do not belong in this serious conversation. Whereas if a black woman contributes to a non-serious conversation, then it's okay. But when she is contributing to an academic, a legal, whatever, a tech review conversation, whatever it is, she can say something completely neutral in a completely neutral voice. And the darker her skin, the more angry she sounds, according to usually the white men in the room. And I'm sorry, white guys, but that's been documented over and over and over again. A few years ago, I met a lawyer, a black woman, and she was telling me that even in a staff meeting, as long as she's sitting at that conference table, the second she opens her mouth about anything, even something like, you know, can you pass me the sugar? She's accused of, you sound kind of angry. This happens to every woman, in many different circumstances, but it is particularly rigorous with black women. It is a kind of tone policing, for one thing, as I already mentioned, but it's also weaponizing a woman's voice against her. Oh, don't get her angry. Don't piss her off. Oh, she's already sounding angry. We better all back off. You know what she's like. She's so scary when she's angry. She's out of control. This puts the woman in a cage. If she says anything to defend herself, it's like, oh, now you're being defensive. If she doesn't say anything to defend herself, it's like, oh, you know, you don't even stand up for yourself. Don't you have any self-respect? You can't move. Left, right, back, forth, up, down. It's an impossible situation. If she says anything at all, if she does anything at all, she's hysterical. Hysteria has been used against women for thousands of years, mostly in this way. It's so infuriating. But there's also a flip side to it, and that's what I wanted to talk about as well, is that women have also used hysteria as a form of self-defense. I mean, there's the kind of self-defense of just acting crazy. But there's also the self-defense of kind of acting less openly or overtly crazy just to keep people away. While Melanie was working with me to prepare this performance, she was telling me that there was a passage in this book from the women hospitalized for hysteria about a woman who muttered to herself all the time or talked to herself all the time. And I was commenting on the fact that, you know, that can also be chanting. Maybe she was soothing herself. Maybe she was calming herself down in a situation in which she had absolutely no control and no bodily autonomy. We as women have used hysteria and even demonic behavior to keep people away. There's a famous case of a bunch of nuns in a convent in medieval France who were meowing for like a week. But if you look into this case, they were meowing in this mass hysteria that they were experiencing whenever a certain priest was visiting the convent. So there may have been some shenanigans going on the priest's side, and that meowing was there to help keep the nuns safe from him. There's the Tanganyika, I can't pronounce that correctly, laughter epidemic in Japan in the 1960s, again, at a girls' school, right, where they were very pressured. You know, it's adolescence, they're going through a lot of stuff, very little room to move. And a laughter epidemic that I think also lasted for about a week or maybe a month, I can't remember, that affected their studies, that also gave them a break from all of that pressure. I mean, we do use these things. And then there's the very famous and more recent shaving of Britney Spears' head when she had a very public, what was considered a meltdown. And I think that was in 2007 or 2008. Shaving off her long golden locks, which she was most known for. But of course, we know now the amount of pressure that she was under, the situation that she was living in between with her family and the paparazzi. Shaving her hair, the thing she was second most known for and most identified for, as a way to defend herself and make space and make mental and emotional space for herself from the constant pressure and the constant attention that she was under is a very clear example. And then in the end, poor Britney ended up suffering the same kind of draconian treatment for hysteria as the hysterical women of the Salpêtrière Hospital in France. Basically put in an asylum. It's a kind of strange catch-22. Personally, I have been accused of sounding too abrasive, and even of being possessed by demons, by a neurologist who accused me of that. But I've only been accused of these things when I've voiced my own boundaries and my own limits, and my anger at injustice that's being done to me. Hysteria, possession, witchcraft, all these things that women have been accused of for thousands and thousands of years just because we want to occupy our own space. Our voice is obviously a really, really powerful weapon. I think we should use it more. A question that comes up a lot in Pretty Deadly classes is, how do I not freeze? And that often includes freezing of the voice, meaning like staying silent or unable to make a sound. That's something that women are really worried about. Well, what if I don't scream? What if I don't cry out for help? What if nobody knows that something's happening to me? But it's also important to remember that, you know, on the one hand, sometimes we stay silent because on a subconscious level, we're picking up some signal that says this is our best bet for survival. But sometimes it's because we've had thousands of years of being thrown into asylums or burnt at stakes or having our tongues cut out or being cast out of our communities or simply just being gaslit for speaking up. I mean, we question ourselves whether we should or we shouldn't. I mean, it's just not always easy to overcome millennia of socialized behavior, and it's not really reasonable to expect women to just get over it, you know? You have been listening to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. You can learn more about who we are and what we do and how to find a Pretty Deadly course near you by visiting our website at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com. And if you're a fitness or martial arts pro and you'd like to enhance your instructor skills, our summer certification programs are open for enrollment. You can find them on our website at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com/selfdefensetrainer, all one word. This podcast is produced by the Singe Network for Pretty Deadly, recorded in Berlin, and our original music is the track Icarus Wish by Berlin band Dead Centuries, used with permission by the artists.